You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education podcast special covering the results of the 2017 Asia University Rankings. I'm joined by rankings editor Phil Beatty and by rankings reporter Ellie Bothwell. We will come to the all-important results in just a moment. I'm sure you're desperate to hear this year's top 10. I won't keep you in suspense for too long. But before we do get to those results, Phil, we have these Asia rankings every year for several years now. I guess my question is why we focus in on that region specifically? And also, is there anything different this time around that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, the world rankings are now more comprehensive than ever before. We cover just under 1,000 institutions, and we'll stick with that 1,000 limit when we look at the entire population of the world. But I think we do find that there are particularly exciting developments. There are institutions making very rapid progress. There's investment going into a lot of East Asian nations, which is converting into more powerful research institutions. And rapid progress. So I think honing in on Asia is a really appropriate way of highlighting some of these good practice case studies, looking at the changing dynamics. We use the same tried and trusted methodology as the World University Rankings, but we do make some small adjustments to the weighting based on feedback from Asia. So we put less weight on reputation and more weight on actually industry links. There's a clear sense of universities as being key to the knowledge economy, key from moving a lot of countries into knowledge-based economies. So we put a bit more emphasis on that industry linkage. But it's pretty much the same as the world rankings. The key difference this year is simply depth. We're ranking 300 Asian universities for the first time. So we're able to provide deeper insights on more institutions. And the really nice thing for me is that although, of course, Ellie in her analysis, you know, we often focus on the great rise of China and the strength of traditionally of Japan and South Korea, it is allowing us to look at countries that are slightly less prestigious. There are appearances from Sri Lanka. There is extended coverage for Pakistan, from Indonesia, Philippines. So there are a lot of countries that are outside the kind of the superpowers of Asia that we can look at and have an examination of. So it's a really good opportunity to look deeper this year.
Indeed. I will just run down the top 10 now, which maybe focuses more on those superpowers at this point, as you might expect. At 10 this year is Pohang University of Science and Technology, or POSTECH. At 9, Seoul National University. At 8, the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology, or KAIST. At 7, it's the University of Tokyo. At 6, Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. At 5, the University of Hong Kong. At 4, Nanyang Technological University. At 3, Tsinghua University. At 2, Peking University. And holding on to the number one spot this year is the National University of Singapore. That's the very top level stuff. Ellie, you've done a bit more analysis of these results. What sort of trends have you picked out for the 2017 Asia rankings results?
So the main trends, I guess, overall is sort of the continuing rise of China and also Hong Kong. South Korea does very well. You mentioned three South Korean universities in the top 10, and KAIST is their sort of national number one for the first time. Japan is the most represented country in the ranking, which is quite interesting because it's last year, I think, it shared that spot with China, and previously China has sort of overtaken it. So Japan is now sort of most represented again with 69 universities, but most of its institutions are falling in contrast to China. But as Phil mentioned, the fact that we've got a top 300 this year has enabled us to kind of look at a much deeper level in Asia. So we can see which countries might become, you know, future higher education hubs for the continent. So Malaysia is one that does particularly well. It has 9 universities overall, and the University of Malaya is leading the country for the first time at 59th place. Indonesia has also doubled its representation. Pakistan has 7. Thailand has 10. So all these countries, potentially have the kind of right characteristics to really expand their higher education. And a lot of them have, expanding populations, big populations of young people. The sort of quality of the institutions is improving, so it'll be interesting to see how they develop in the years to come.
In terms of sort of closing ground, obviously this ranking doesn't include some of the traditional heavyweights of higher education, the Stanfords, the Harvards, the Oxfords and the Cambridges. Phil, how long is it, do you think, before these sort of Asian universities are able to catch up with the likes of those more established and so perhaps arguably better known higher education institutions?
Well, I think someone like the number one university in this ranking, the National University of Singapore, I'd almost argue it's already made it. It's 24th in the world rankings, number one in Asia, and it's been creeping up slowly. So that really is almost an institution performing on an equal footing with some of the stellar brands across the world. You know, it has famous partnerships like the NUS Yale Liberal Arts Institution, for example. It has collaborations with top universities across the world. It's got resources a lot of institutions could only dream of. So I think that's already there. The two powerhouses in China, the Beijing 2, Peking University, Tsinghua University, they take 2 and 3 in the Asia ranking, but they're, again, you know, making incredible progress in the world. 29th for Peking in the world, 35th for Tsinghua. Mm. And they're pushing and pushing.
And, of course, China now is the, I believe, the third biggest attractor of international students after the US and the UK, which shows that students are putting their money where their mouths are and making that move to China because of these institutions in some part.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's interesting is that they for a couple of decades now, they've had the investment, they've had the government completely committed to building world-class universities. They've put incredible resources into the top institutions in China, not just those two, but the a select group of excellence initiative universities. But what might be a tipping point is one of the things we've always said about China is that, well, they've got all the money now, they've got the infrastructure, but perhaps they haven't quite got the culture. There's still some challenges around pure academic freedom. Is it still a challenge to get the absolute stellar scholars to go and live and work in China? And it almost feels like, in terms of the shifting balance of power around the mobility of talent or academic talent, that places like China could really gain now. You know, it's not necessarily in this kind of populist, protect your borders, build your walls kind of world that we're seeing in the West with the UK and Brexit and anti-immigration stance and in the US with Trump. It does feel like the traditional powerhouses may become less attractive to international talent. You know, they're sending out these vibes that they're not welcoming foreigners. Obviously, you know, a lot of it's rhetoric, but rhetoric is powerful. It puts people off. So I think there is a sense that even in the balance of academic talent mobility, China is in a really strong position. It's done a great job of attracting leading Chinese scholars back to China from careers they've built in the US, for example. Maybe they don't even have to do that anymore. Maybe they can build their own infrastructure much better. So I think actually, I genuinely believe in a decade or so you'd see them really pushing right up there among those sort of top 10, top 20 spots, and they're very close already.
Indeed. You can find the full top 300 on our website at timeshighereducation.com. Just click the rankings tab, or you can go directly to the rankings pages at www.theewur.com. Now, Ellie, as rankings reporter, you've a rather busy year ahead. A little bit of future gazing here. We've got a number of rankings on the horizon to look forward to once we've all gotten over the excitement of these Asia rankings.
Yes, we also have the Young Universities rankings, which will be released at the beginning of April. And for the first time, as well as the top universities age 50 or under, we're looking at four more tables on particular generations of universities. So we have a new ranking that we're calling the Golden Age ranking of universities founded between 1945 and 1966. And we also have tables looking at Generation X, Generation Y and Millennial universities. So that's quite an exciting one for us. We've also got the Reputation rankings, which will be out in May. And the best universities in Europe will be out in June as well. So there's lots to look forward to.
Yeah, some highlights there. You can get a full list on the website. Just search for rankings at timeshighereducation.com. And that's all for this Asia University Rankings podcast special. If you want to comment on the rankings, you can do so on our site. You can also find Times Higher Education and the World University Rankings on Facebook, on Twitter and on LinkedIn. But that's all for this THE Asia University Rankings podcast special.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.